Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining me today. My name is Dmitry Vinnik, and I welcome you all to the next episode of the DIF podcast. And today I have a pleasure of speaking with Nicola Corti, but I'll let him introduce himself.
So, hi, everyone. Thank you very much for joining us on the show. My name is Nicola Corti. I'm a software engineer on the React Native team. And I'm super excited to tell you a little bit about myself, like what do I do, and a little bit about open source, I guess, right?
Fantastic. Yes. As some of you know who follow Meta Open Source, we actually just started publishing Meet the Developer Mobile Edition blogging series. So I'm very interested in mobile development these days. And I believe Nicola has a great experience in mobile development. And I'd like to tell from you right now what's your journey was like into mobile development.
Yeah. So I would say that my journey in mobile started several years ago. I always used to love Linux. So I literally started using Linux on the first personal computer I had. And I always liked do a little bit of programming and so on. And then as, mobile phones got released, like iPhone and so on, there were no real alternatives to let Linux run on mobile. And then at a certain point, Android got released. And I felt like, oh, whoa, this is Linux on phone. And I want to work for that. So I started learning how to do Android apps and so on and so forth. And then I kept on being involved more and more in Android development. I landed my first job in a startup as an Android engineer. And then I basically moved in Europe in several countries. As an Android engineer, again, focusing on developing apps. And honestly, there is nothing that drives me more than the idea of writing code that ends up in the pocket of millions of users around the globe. So I really feel empowered when I see that, the user is running one app and the app is powered to the with the code I wrote.
Amazing. Yes, that's definitely an exciting thing to see that you are very consumer facing. The things you do matter and you can see them in action. You can actually use them on your own, right? The dog fooding, as they would call it. So that's definitely a great experience. But you mentioned Android and Linux before that. It seems like you have this narrative of open source throughout your career. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, I really loved open source since I discovered this idea. Like the fact that you can actually write code, share it publicly, and get feedback on your code from others, get someone else helping you and improving it, or get the code that someone else wrote and improve it and make it better is always something that, I found it fascinating. I found it that you can write great code, but together we can do something better. And some of the biggest open source projects, again, like Linux or others, actually developed by millions of developers around the globe. So, I can say that I always felt so much driven by doing open source. And I always tried to search for opportunities, like meeting other developers, starting new projects together with others. Open source was always a recurring topic in all the jobs that I had the opportunity to do in the past years. And then finally I landed on the React Native team, which as you probably know, is one of the biggest project on GitHub. And I have the opportunity to work full time in the open source ecosystem, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's definitely a great opportunity of open source being your full-time job, like my own, right? I'm a developer advocate of Meta Open Source. And as you said, it's very rewarding. But before we dive into what your current role is, if you were to pinpoint one thing, what's the best thing that you find about open source? Like personally, what do you enjoy the most about open source? You mentioned a couple of things, but I was wondering if you can pinpoint one single point.
So one thing that I really like of open source is the feeling of basically impacting others' people's life. I have to mention that I always like to work on developer tools. Like I worked on a lot of open source projects, and most of them are essentially libraries linters or tools that developers will use daily. And having the opportunity to work on a tool that can improve your workflow, that can make you a better developer, that can make you smile in the sense that you will enjoy your code more because you will write better code, is something that is really rewarding to me. And it's something that, the open source community is a space where you can experience those kind of opportunities over and over. So literally, the feeling of improving the day of another developer is something that drove me into maintaining and creating open source projects for the wider community.
That's great. I can definitely relate. One of my main personal goals is always improve productivity and efficiency of developers, not in the way of, you know, making more money and for the corporation they work for, or, you know, making them deliver more in a sprint or in a whatever working cycle they operate in. But the main thing I was always looking for from productivity is that they able to spend less time on work because, you know, they have this chunk of work to need to complete, able to complete it faster, you know, more easily, and then ultimately spend more time on their own personal lives, right? Spend with their family, spend on their hobbies. So that's what productivity to me, and that's what the goal I've been always chasing or trying to improve others, you know, workflow. And it seems like, again, you actually found similar way to do it through open source, and that's definitely great to hear.
Yeah, and if I can add one thing, I like to mention that for me, open source is like, as like one hobby, frankly. Like when people ask me like, oh, what are your hobbies? So I really love running, but another hobby that I have is literally open source. Like I literally like to know what's going on in the open source community, engaging with others, finding new projects, supporting other projects, see if there is opportunities for a project to grow where I can help them growing. So it's something where like I really enjoy spending my free time. And I like it, but I have to mention that, obviously it's taking quite some time of mine. And a lot of the great software in this planet is relying on open source contributors. So we should be extremely grateful to those kind of people that are spending their time, their free time in doing this kind of work. And I'm actually also extremely supporting to any sponsorship opportunity or anything like Open Collective and so on to make those projects sustainable. Because again, there are projects which are really running the world. Like there are servers or infrastructures that are built on top of open source software. And that software is developed by normal human beings which are investing their free time. So it's literally like one fundamental part of the IT ecosystem. We should all be grateful to this, and we should all be like, think about other open source developers which are spending their time.
Absolutely. That's why it's so important to invest in, you know, products like projects like Open Collective and supporting open source projects, whether it's, you know, external or even internal, that come out of the world, right? And I agree with you. The world, you know, runs on open source one way or another. There is, even the companies that develop their own products, one way or another, they most likely depend on something open source. Even if it's just checking a JavaScript is the, you know, number odd or even, right? One of the most popular frameworks in the libraries out there. So you know, that's why whenever I see. I would even call it maybe entitlement to some extent, expect that someone would fix it, being demanding. It's not, they're not your employees, right? When you go into open source and asking for help, you're being polite. You are actually maybe offering your own help and offering to be taught how to actually fix the bug. That's why I like the projects that really try to invest in growing their contributors, you know, maintainers, fleet of, you know, the people overall. So, but and I'm glad you can clearly see you're very passionate about it. That's why I'm excited to hear of how you're able to connect with your previous experience of really focusing on mobile and being excited about it with Android and now working with React Native at Meta. If you can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so I would like to point out that Meta has this unique onboarding experience called Bootcamp. Mm-hmm. I think it's really something that is unique in this industry. I saw it only at Meta. Like, I'm not aware of other companies doing so, and I'm actually surprised that this pattern is not replicated by others. But basically, you have the opportunity in your first weeks to experience different teams and to get to work with them, like actually deliver code, like ship code to production. When I joined Meta, I would have never said like, yeah, maybe I will end up in React Native or whatever. Like, I knew that I wanted to do open source, and there are a bunch of projects which are like developed daily here. But I had the opportunity to spend some time with this team, and I felt like that the magnitude of the open source community related to React Native was immense, and I could have really delivered great value to this community. And so I just felt like, yeah, this looks like an amazing place to be, like something where I can be helpful to others, something where I can really donate my skills for the open source community. And React Native, as some of you probably know, is one of the most popular cross-platform framework. It allows to develop Android and iOS apps, but not only. There are forks of React Native for Windows, for macOS, and other platforms. And the amount of possibility that this framework enables is tremendous. And I'm really impressed by how many people are involved in this framework. It's not just the React Native team. It's a whole group of contributors from all around the globe, from different companies with different backgrounds, which are collaborating daily to improve this framework, to ship it to millions of developers out there. And also the possibility of having the whole history of my contribution completely public, fully available on GitHub, is something that really drives me forward. It feels like, okay, I'm doing something, I'm spending my time, I'm creating some code, I'm creating some infrastructure, but I'm also donating it to the public so that everyone can actually use it, benefit from it, build amazing apps. I'm pretty sure that if I would take your phone, I could pinpoint some apps that are written in React Native. So yeah, I'm glad that I got this opportunity to essentially spend my full-time job in doing open source, which is quite a unique opportunity, I would say.
That's definitely unique. For those, you know, of our listeners who are not familiar with what React Native, while it is popular, you know, I like not to make assumptions of some folks might not know. So how would you, you know, define React Native in simple terms?
Yeah, so as I briefly mentioned before, React Native is a framework for developing cross-platform mobile applications. So it allows you to use all the concepts that you learned in the React space, so in the web space, and translate them into mobile. So essentially, starting from a React application, you can create Android and iOS application. I assume someone is familiar with mobile development, but if you're not, I would like to mention that doing mobile apps is not easy. Like, it requires a lot of learning, a lot of framework-specific knowledge, which, if you're developing a product and you want to develop a product for Android and iOS, the assumption is that I will have to hire like a group of Android engineers and a group of iOS engineers. And so there are like a huge group of apps that will benefit from actually just writing a single code base and being able to write to ship app for both Android and iOS, reusing the same concepts. So the framework is really powerful. Again, has been used in production by a lot of big companies. And we Meta are also using that in production in several of our apps. And so this is a proof of how flexible this framework is and how extensible it can become. So Yeah, and it's all open source. Like, we're not selling it. Like, you can literally take the code, clone it, do whatever you want. Maybe you build your own hardware and you can create UI for it with React Native. Obviously, you will need some adaptations, but yeah, it's all open source and all done for the sake of sharing knowledge with the rest of the open source community.
Great. So as you mentioned, React Native is now used on so many different devices and platforms. I believe last year, if I'm not mistaken, maybe even the year before, React Native has published a blog about the multi-platform vision where, yes, they are now targeting desktop applications, AR, VR, and more. So again, it's great to see a project like that growing and expanding. You also mentioned a bootcamp. Yes, the bootcamp, as the, you know, our listeners can read at the Meta Careers blog. We've discussed it in length there, but basically, you know, it's usually a 6-week program when engineers or whoever joins Meta, they usually go through this, what we call bootcamp, where they get to learn about different areas of the company. If they're not pre-assigned, they can choose what team to go to, you know, have a trial with, let's say, Android team or iOS team or whatever other team they'd like, or different products, and choose what actually works for them, what they enjoy the most. And it's, I believe it's really connected to the open source nature of things, because again, open source in the DNA of Meta, it's how we got our start, and we keep doing it, you know, in our culture as well. It's trying to be transparent, opening up, making people you know, accountable, but also giving them opportunity to make changes to production, right? As Nicola mentioned. So again, for me personally, when I joined, it was also great to see. In regards to what you mentioned about the React Native, is there something in particular you'd like to, you know, you remember you being most proud of when you first started on working on a product? Any particular feature or change you've made that was very impactful to you personally? Like, you remember that till the rest of your life, basically.
For React Native?
Yeah, or when you joined the team, yeah, for the React Native. Or even maybe in the bootcamp, or even before, like in that space in particular. Because for myself personally, and yeah, I'll basically give you a start in that sense, when I was working at my previous company, I still remember to this day, I created a migration framework from old platform to a new platform. And I'll just remember that process, you know, for the rest of my days, as I said. It's been an exciting experience and it's been very impactful for our customers. So maybe you have something like that you really would like recall?
Yeah. I mean, it's not a specific change in a sense, but it's more like a process. It's actually still ongoing. So React Native went through a major rewrite of the internals. So you will find it on the reactnative.dev website referred as the new architecture. And this work essentially, like, it literally brings like a new life to the framework, because it unblocks a lot of opportunities between the JavaScript layer and the native layer. And I am responsible of the migration of the whole ecosystem to the new architecture, which, as you can imagine, is quite crucial in a sense that we want to allow libraries and third-party apps to run on the new architecture, as we are doing. And yeah, there is a lot of work to be done in the open source space to enable others. So a lot of work in terms of documentation, processes, infrastructure, build tools, and so on. So it's not just one single change, but again, it's a whole collection of content and material that we are shipping for the community. And I think this is literally where you can see the commitment of the React team as a whole towards the open source community. Like, we are fully on board on these. Like, we truly believe that React and React Native can evolve only if the open source community is on board with us. If we will miss out on that, it's going to be a pain both for us and for the open source community. So we literally invest full-time resources on this, which I think it's unique in the industry. It's really hard to find, again, frameworks, unless they are like obviously paid solutions, like enterprise solutions, which are like monetized. It's really hard to find companies investing full-time in frameworks for the sake of the open source community. So again, I think this is a pretty unique opportunity for anyone to be. And if someone is extremely passionate about open source and mobile development, drop us a message because we are hiring. And yeah, we would be happy to chat with you.
Of course, yes. Meta is just is constantly growing. And again, it's great that you mentioned that we're trying to involve the community a lot more, right? The React had the work groups that really was a crucial part of launching the latest release of React. And it's amazing to see that React Native and this whole ecosystem is growing and becoming more transparent, more involving for the community. But, you know, to another point you said, that's the process you'd be working on, not a particular change. And it's the key here that open source is really not about any single pull requests we make, any single code change. It's actually everything else, right? It's the process, it's architecture, it's the request for proposals. And then, it can be documentation change. It can be actually, you know, leading the work group, all that work that comes happens within the open source, within the project, is what basically makes the, you know, wheels of the project move forward, right? That's what pushes it forward. So I'm glad you focus on that and not on a single pull request. So it's again, it's great to hear. Great to hear.
Yeah, and if I can add one thing, one thing that I really enjoy doing in open source and React Native in this space is giving me a lot of opportunities. Is essentially community work. Like, it's not just about writing code and developing features, but also mentoring others, helping people that are new to the open source space, creating their first pull request, helping them with code reviews and so on. Or also, and this is something that I've done in other projects that I maintained in the past, a lot of governance work. So how do we find a consensus between different maintainers? How do we split the work between different people? How do we automate processes that are related to repository management? We have too many issues with too many pull requests. How we can make this scale as the project grows. So those are problems that are unique to the open source space. And I also like sometimes speak with other engineers from other companies, they're like super experienced, but they maybe have no knowledge of how the open source space works at all. So I would say that this is like a unique skill set that you develop only by doing open source on a daily basis or by spending time in open source communities.
That's definitely true. It's the skill, but I believe, you know, these days, it's an open enough community where, I mean, it depends on the community, obviously, but some communities really help you get up to speed and become a part of it and learn those skills, master them even. It's not really a talent that you're born with. It's something, again, you learn and you get better at. And to that point, though, you know, to shift kind of away from Meta-specific work you've been doing, I believe you are also a Kotlin expert from the Google Developer Experts, right?
How does it connect
with your overall work of the current work and internally and also outside of Meta?
Yeah. So if you were to ask me what's my favorite programming language, the answer will be necessarily Kotlin. Oh. I'm a big fan of it. I've been involved in the language since before it was released as a stable. For those of you who are not aware, Android development historically always happened with Java. Java is quite of an old programming language, and especially on Android, the versions of Java that you were allowed to use got stuck for a long period of time. So you could not use a lot of the nice features that more evolved and more like newer programming language could use. In this space, JetBrains developed the Kotlin programming language, which is compatible with anything that runs on the JVM. So you can mix Java and Kotlin code as you wish, and introduces a lot of feature that were missing in Java, and makes writing code so much of a pleasure. Because it's so expressive, it's so compact, it's so really nice to write. I've been developing static analyzers and generally tools that help developing this language. I've been also contributing a little bit in the compiler, like really small things, but yeah, I've been highly involved in the Kotlin community. I really like this language, and also within React Native, we are actively using this language. Specifically, all of our build code is written in Kotlin. So whenever you run a command, like React Native run Android, that runs some Kotlin code under the hood. We are also looking into migrating a little bit of the core of React Native. We have some Kotlin code in it, but for historical reason, there is a lot of Java, so we are like slowly moving from Java to Kotlin. And we are also updating our website to be bilingual. And this, again, I want to point out that this is a community-driven effort. So we do, at the time of recording, we do have an issue on the, like a GitHub issue on the website of React Native, where you can subscribe and you can ask to get a page assigned to you. And there's a list with all the pages that contains only Java code. And you can say like, hey, I want to do this page. And then you will be responsible of migrating that page to use both Java and Kotlin code. And again, this is a work that I honestly could have done in like 1 or 2 days. I could have just taken the website and done it all by myself. But I thought that this was an opportunity to engage the community, to spread the knowledge of Kotlin, to let other people being part of something bigger. So instead of just doing all the work by myself or with just me and my colleagues, I said like, hey, let's kick it off as a community-driven work. So now I think we are like close to hit the 50% completion of this work. But yeah, like, this is, I want to call it out because literally, I think for open source, the question that I receive the most is, where do I start? And we are doing our best to create tasks, bug reports, or initiatives like this one that would allow people that are not open source experts to get started, to do a small task, to know who to ping to get some support. So my suggestion is keep an eye on those repository, subscribe to get notifications, see how people are engaging over there. So keep observing for a bit, and then you can actually start contributing. In this space, Kotlin is a great language because the amount of resources you can find online, again, it's quite extensive. Like, literally, the language is out since several years now. And also the space where you can find support, like Stack Overflow, Slack, forums, and so on, they are really active. So I, to anyone doing Android or anything native, like React Native also, I would totally recommend to use Kotlin instead of Java today. It's just way nicer. And you will enjoy writing Android code more than before.
Great. And again, I like that you mentioned that some of the things you could have done yourself, or I've frequently seen that other projects would have similar, where there is a bug, there is an issue that would literally take a person in the know an hour, maybe a couple minutes. But instead, they actually mentor, they pair with someone who's newer to fix that, because it's really this imposter syndrome, worrying that you don't know enough to make a change to such a massive project like React Native. But here, because when you do little thing, or something that's like even a, let's say, documentation change, you already feel like more empowered. You feel like you went through this whole pull request, submission, merge process. You're now a contributor to some extent. And honestly, personally, I believe that what distinguishes more kind of a junior engineer from more senior engineer, open source or not, where if you're trying to tackle everything on your own, not asking for help, not trying to empower anybody to fix something, that's what the junior engineer, less experienced, not the number of years you've done it. You can sit and do the same thing for years and become a senior, really, in some organizations. But it's the shift, mind shift, where you'd now, I could have done it myself, but instead I'll spend more time in empowering others, right? And that's what I feel like exactly what you're doing here. And to that point, I'd like to actually hear about your podcast, because I believe that's one of the ways you kind of spread the word about tech. And if you could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. So I'm running a podcast. It's called The Developer's Bakery. You will find it online at thebakery.dev or on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and Google Podcast, if you search for The Developer's Bakery. So the idea behind the podcast is to have a place where I can allow open source maintainers or authors of tools to have a space where they can tell what they're doing, present their project, and tell us a little bit of story behind it. So to be frank, the reason why I started this podcast is because I started it during the pandemic. So I think it was end of 2020. And this is a side project of mine. So little side note, all the websites and everything is self-hosted and written by me. There is the whole pipeline that handles the publishing and so on. It's just because I was looking for a side project and I wanted to learn how podcast works internally. I haven't used any automated tools, which there are plenty of them out there in the market. Essentially, during the pandemic, I developed this infrastructure. And then I said, like, hey, how about I reach out to someone? Because I've been highly involved in conferences or like other, you know, public speaking opportunities. But with the pandemic, I was really missing the networking of such events. Like I was missing the 10 minutes discussion with the developer advocate, which I will find over there. So I thought like, hey, there is a lot of people that I would love to meet and I would love to get to know them. I would love to know what they're doing, how their project started and what are the challenges behind it and so on. How about I just invite them to speak and to tell me, like to tell us why they even started the project, how it started and so on. And so so far I think we are beyond episode 30. I'm frank, I'm not checking statistics that much. It's just like a way for me to get in touch with other people, to share the knowledge about certain projects. It's really niche. Sometimes we really deep dive into some of the mobile technicalities. So I hope people are not enticed away by the depth of the topics. But aside from that, I found podcasting as a way to enjoy my time and getting to know more people. Please, everyone, take a look at it. Drop me a message if you're interested, like, or leave some feedback. There is a Twitter account for it. So I'm reading every message that I receive over there. So, yeah.
Great. And we'll link the podcast in the show notes as well, so anybody can follow and give it a listen. So that's great. And I like that you've used this time during COVID. While I know you've really done quite a bit of public speaking before, the pandemic happened. Have you had any, interest in doing virtual events lately, or are you thinking of going back on some public speaking, or you really been enjoying the podcasting a bit more?
Yeah. I think it's a mixture of the two. I really miss the again, the opportunities to meet physically with other developers, like, I don't know, getting a speaker's dinner the day before the event and getting like a like after party, or just getting to speak with people, like literally the last conferences I've been to, I recall that I was mostly, I was not really attending talks, like maybe two or three, but most of my time was actually spent connecting with others, creating new opportunities and so on. So this is something that, well, virtual events try to replicate in some form, but it's not the same as in-person events. That being said, I'm actually a big fan of virtual when it comes to connecting with communities that are far away. Like, I had the opportunity to give virtual talks for schools in India, which I would have never had the opportunity to travel to. Or, you know, maybe you can just do one big travel for a conference a year. Like, you would not go to all the small meetups. While with virtual, I really had the opportunity to connect with a lot of different people. So in a sense, well, pandemic happened. It was not great for a lot of people. But yeah, I'm glad we all managed to work it out, and we found a way to share knowledge, which didn't require us to meet in person. But I'm really looking forward to getting back to some degree, whenever it's possible and safe to do so in person in the near future.
Yeah, what we would call it usually is a hallway track, when you don't go to events, you go to the conference, but you don't go to the talks themselves as much. But yeah, just networking, speak. And actually, I used to go to a lot of conferences, and I would, because most of the talks were recorded, I didn't see a reason of going there, right? Like, when I'm in person, while I can utilize things that are not recorded, talking to people, not for the sake of growing my LinkedIn profile, but to know what they do, to know what the world, especially after my talk, if I give a talk and I like to hear people's experiences, that's what excited me the most. But really, as we're closing, you know, closer to the end of our episode, I'd like to hear about one of your hobbies that you mentioned today. It's running. I believe you are, I would call it a long distance runner. I know it's not an ultra marathon, but still it's marathons.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Okay. I love running. I started to run, let's say, more seriously in 2019, just before the pandemic. And I think it was something that, I always did some short runs for the sake of being fit. But then I noticed that there is a huge community around running. And again, this topic of communities comes over and over, and yeah, you will be surprised by how many people are actually running and how different it feels to run when you're alone or when you're within a group of people. So I had the opportunity to run the London Marathon in 2021. I got an entry for the Berlin Marathon in 2022.
Oh,
so looking forward to that. It requires a bit of preparation. I have to admit that I could do better in being more exact on following my preparation schedule. But at the end of the day, running for me is fun. Like, I literally enjoy going out and running, listening to music and so on. Then if I do it together with others, it's even more fun. So, Every weekend, more or less, I'm joining some like local races or so. But yeah, it's something that I found like great for health reasons, as you can imagine. But also a nice opportunity to connect with the local communities. If I can call out a race, I will definitely mention the Park Run initiatives. It's a thing that started in London, I believe, or definitely in UK, but now it's available all over Europe for sure. So it's basically like volunteer organized races, which are 5K races in parks. So literally, if you search in London, you will find that basically every park has one. And on Saturday morning, you just wake up, you go there, it's free, you run. There is a group of people, like 400, 500 people, they all run. And there are volunteers which are basically helping, taking the time. And it's just like, it feels so different. Like I could run 5K alone, but if I'm there with others, it just like feels completely different. Trust me. Like if you've never done it, do that. And what is even great is that I'm from Italy. So I said like, hey, how about I search for a park run? And I noticed that there is one next to the city where I'm from.
Nice.
And yeah, it was so great because when I've been there, I actually found a lot of people that were from London. And they started saying like, oh, you live in London, so you should come to our park run, which is the one in Hampstead Heath or so. So it's so great how you can create community through those opportunities. So I literally invite everyone to take a stance and go out and run a bit. You will probably the first time will be challenging, but you will find a lot of people that are so much into running and are really like driven by this.
Of course, yes. Again, it can be a run. It can be starting with a walk or just going for a stroll. If you have young kids as well, just taking a stroller out, really just it's combining breathing fresh air and as well as, enjoying yourself and some exercise. And it's, the time when I used to travel a lot, like I remember one month I visited like 13 countries for conferences, and I wouldn't go to the gym in a hotel or near Airbnb where I would stay. I would always just have a pair of, the running shoes with me, and I'll go for a run. It would be long distance. And even if I don't know anybody there, I can use some apps like Strava that shares my run with others. I listen to, I never alone because I listen to a podcast or listen to music. So I feel like someone is with me. So yeah, it's definitely, I can connect to you in that sense. It's very exciting, and it's this runner's high is the real thing. And when you run a marathon, it's very different than from running, or with somebody than running on your own. I've experienced it multiple times too. So I'm sure others will find it great too. So thank you so much for your time today. I know our time zones, I'm, Pacific time zone, you in Europe right now. So it's quite late for you and early for me, but I'm great we connected. I'm glad we connected, and I hope everyone enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure, and keep up the great work with the podcast.
Thank you. You too. We're also going to share your podcast too. So hopefully everybody who's listening right now will subscribe and give it a listen, as I said before. So thank you.